Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench and radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
Bill, M0HBR, KL7R. In the past 2 or 3 minutes, I just got both channels of the binaural receiver working. I don't have quadrature yet, but I've got both channels working. Over.
Excellent. Well, I'm calling in at a good moment, then. It's a good homebrew moment. Congratulations. Yeah, well. So, when you say you don't have quadrature yet, what do you mean? I mean, you don't have them completely in the proper phase. What do you mean by that? Go ahead.
Well, the idea of the binaural receiver is that you get different phases in one ear and than the other, and so it's like you get sine in one ear and cosine in the other, or a signal and a 90-degree out signal, and that's quadrature.
Okay, so yeah, I guess you have to adjust it so you get the desired stereo effect. Is that it?
No, I got a wind 17-turn bifiler on a T30-6, and it's basically a balun, a choke balun, where you got two coils and you stick it into one mixer. And then from the other end, you stick it into the other mixer, so that the idea is that you got I and then Q, and change phase of the local oscillator going into the first mixer. There's a pair of mixers, and so one gets in phase and one gets 90 degrees. Or I'm not sure it's going to work for all bands. The one in page 9.20 of experimental methods. For 40 meters. I don't know if it's just for 40 meters. I'm gonna find out. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, and it was that QST article a while back. I'm sure you saw it. If not, you need to get a hold of it. But that sounds really interesting. That'd be fun when you get going with that. I've only seen one once here at a ham fest, or a rally, they call them here. And the guy had it set up, but he was inside. He didn't have much of an antenna on it, so I didn't get to hear the full effect. That's terrific. Well, I've been making almost no progress here on my projects. I come in and I turn on the ceramic oscillator, and I hook up the counter, and I hook up the oscilloscope, and it creates the illusion of homebrew progress here. But the signal is very clean. I tweaked it a little bit, and now I'm getting about 59 kilohertz of usable shift. I haven't played around at all with additional capacitors or coils or anything like that. Other projects going on, but I just like to see the scope sitting there with a nice clean sine wave on it. I'm sure you know what I mean as a true home brewer. I was doing some web surfing there just this morning, and I found a really cool website related to what you were telling me about the Wi-Fi distance contests. And this is the inevitable how to make a 2.4 gigahertz antenna out of the coffee can. High gain. As I'm looking at this thing, I'm thinking it's probably not a good idea to point this at yourself, especially in sensitive areas. Anyway, I thought it was pretty cool, pretty good website, so I sent it to you. And I went to the website and downloaded the.
Yeah, I'm looking at this the ChiliCan waveguide antenna. I've looked at them. I don't know if I talked to you about when I was in college, but when I was in college, HBO was transmitted on 2.4 gigahertz back. the only thing on 2.4 gigahertz besides microwave TVs. And in Anchorage and Fairbanks, they put transmitters on the tops of the mountains, and they would broadcast clear HBO on 2.4 gigs. And in the back of magazines, there were these circuits which had, I'm trying to remember, MRF 901 sticks in my head. It had some waveguide, a waveguide strip line dipole, and a MRF 901 oscillator. I believe that's what it was. An oscillator, a 2 gig oscillator, and the circuit was just the perfect size for a 1 pound coffee can, which is about the same size as Nelly's big chunk chili beef stew, only half the height. And anyway, what you did is you put this waveguide, this circuit at the bottom. You cut out the bottom of your 1 pound coffee can, and you put this circuit board at the bottom of the coffee can, and it had a receive antenna in it. And you basically ran a coax off the back of the circuit board, and so it had a local oscillator that was about 2 gigs, and that mixed with the incoming signal, and the output signal was a direct conversion receiver anyway, you wind up with 400 megahertz output. And so I was watching HBO for free doing that, and anytime I see this Wi-Fi at 2.4 gigs, I think about that. Did I ever tell you about that? The M0 HPR KL7R.
That's great, yeah. Hey, listen, that brings up a question, something that's been in the back of my mind here, bothering me for a while, and you could probably answer the question. We have Sky TV here. It's supposedly a satellite TV system. It's great. I mean, we get, you know, a zillion channels and everything comes in. But I was here when the guy installed the dish. And the dish is a tiny little thing. It's about a foot or 18 inches long. It's kind of oblong shaped, little kind of mesh steel thing. And he went up on the roof, and he kind of just slapped it onto the chimney. Told me he just needed a view of the south, somewhere in the south. Kind of aimed it generally towards the south. Checked for the signal and didn't mess with it too much at all. And so this all led me to think that antenna is not aimed at any spacecraft. It's probably aimed at something, at an antenna on the ground that's repeating the satellite signal. And as you walk around London, you see these little dishes. Yesterday, my wife and I took a walk, and I saw one that was actually, so they have these basement apartments. I mean, the land is so high priced that people are living in apartments underground. And there's one guy at the underground apartment, and the door, you're looking down from the street, and I look, and there's the dish there, mounted on it's below the street level. And he's obviously using it, he's obviously getting a signal. And I'm thinking, there's just no way this is going up to a spacecraft. Am I right, Mike? Are a lot of these systems, based on aiming it at a terrestrial microwave antenna, KL7R, M0 HPR?
Well, I don't know about that particular one, but DirecTV is the same size antenna. It's maybe 18 inches, and basically south means that there's a geosynchronous satellite due south of England, at whatever the look angle is for that satellite, and you kind of get close, and then when you have a TV sitting there, then you tune it into where it's better. But you probably got a pretty heavy footprint from the satellite. Up here, we can't use those little 18-inch dishes. They can in the States, but in Alaska, we have to use like 4 footers minimum to even get. The ones that normally can be seen with the 18-inch dish footprint, or the beam of the satellite is not optimized for Alaska. It's optimized for the States, and it's multiple satellites. And he's probably pointing at one that's just got a hurricane big footprint in England, and that's why it's working. And a lot of times those things don't look like they're pointing up to the sky. I don't know what your looking up at about 40 degrees. A lot of those things are off-center, offset feed, and so the dishes aren't actually pointing up. The dishes can be pointing horizontal, but the reflection of the feed horn points up, you know, bounces up, and so I wouldn't be surprised if it isn't coming in from space there. I'll have to look up Sky TV and see if it is a satellite feed. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, you might be right. KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, now that, you know, I thought about, I know about the off-center feed. But it's just, it's amazing. You see these things are all over the place. Like you said, it must be one huge footprint. I'm probably influenced in this by my experiences out in the Azores, where we were definitely not in the footprint. I mean, I was trying to get Armed Forces Television out there. There's the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. And I wanted to get it so that the kids could watch cartoons and my wife could watch Oprah, things like that. And we had a fairly big satellite dish up on the roof of the house when I got there. I guess it was about, maybe a 6-foot diameter dish. And it needed some work, but I got it cleaned up and everything. And then I was looking at on the internet at the footprint of the satellite we were looking at. We were trying to get, I think, Hot Bird 4. And then it didn't look good because all the RF was aimed right at Germany because of the U.S. troops there. And we were very, very, very much in the fringe area. But I figured we'd give it a shot. We had the receiver and the dish, and the local tech came over, and you know, with the digital, it's all or nothing. And he had to get this thing tuned, I mean, almost within half a degree, and then the signal would pop in. And we had really good service with it, but if anything got between the dish and the sky, we would lose the signal. And any real heavy thunderstorm activity or anything like that, we'd lose it. We'd also lose it certain times. I think either at the, at the equinox, for some reason, we'd get a lot of problems during those periods. But generally, it was okay. I guess I'm just not used to living in an area where there's such a concentration. And Sky TV would definitely put its footprint over this particular part of England. KL7R, M0HBR.
About this here phasing thing. I'm going to have to I don't understand what this here schematic is telling me, but I'm definitely going to build it and fiddle and see what I learn there. Over.
Yeah, KL7RN0HBR.
Yeah.
Well, really interesting. Yeah. I guess it is satellite. Yeah. And well, listen. You know, if you're going to wind the bifilar transformer, I did it the easy way one time. I had to wind one for my, I think it was for the balance modulator in my SSB transmitter for 17 meters. And what, instead of, you know, you can take the trick, you know, you got to wind the two wires together. So the old trick is you get two pieces of enamel wire and put them in the chuck of a drill. And then you get the drill going slowly, so you're getting about, I think, 8 turns per inch is what they recommend. And then you wind the coil with that. But I guess I was in a rush, or I just saw an easier way of doing it. But I had one of these old, kind of old-style headphones, sort of crystal headphones, the kind that came with cheap little transistor radios. And they had the two wires wound kind of helically. I guess that's the word for it. Twisted together nice and neat. I wouldn't use the headphones, so I just snip, took off the wire. And I used the wire as the bifilar elements, and they were already wound nice and neat. And I put it on the toroid, and it looked pretty. So yeah, that kind of wire sitting around, you might do that and save yourself some winding. You got to watch it with the enamel wire too. When you wind them together, there's always a possibility of a short, which will mess you up completely. Hey, technical question here. It's the kind of thing that you know and then you forget. When you work with a crystal ladder filter, you and I talked about this a while back. You have to, when you want to broaden the bandwidth, the response of the filter, you want to broaden it, say, from CW to phone. Do you decrease or increase the value of the caps to ground? You know, you get the caps to ground there between the crystals. And if you want to broaden, do you decrease or increase? What's happening is I have my little 17-meter receiver here, originally built for CW, originally built for, I think, 20-meter CW, and now I've got it on 17-meter sideband. I've broadened the filter response, but not quite enough. I'm sure you know what I mean. It's very restricted, and if I get a good quality phone signal and I get it tuned just right, it sounds okay. But if I get kind of a standard quality phone signal, it's really restricted. So I want to broaden the response of the filter a little bit. And I need to know whether I should put more capacitance in or less. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. And that reminded me what I wanted to talk to you about. Lowering widens it, is my experience. I was experimenting with the ATS-3 filter. And the ATS-3 filter had a ladder filter with shunt caps, and they were 150 picofarad. And I changed the shunt caps to 100 picofarad and got a wider response. What I did was I went and downloaded some software, filter design software, and then lowered the frequency. I don't know why your frequency went up when you paralleled. That, something about parallel or series capacitance. Be fun to experiment with both of those and see what happens. So I'll try to look and see if I can find the software I used. The same guy, the AADE filter design.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. You mentioned AADE, and I was on that website yesterday because my birthday is coming up, and my wife said to me, "Give me some suggestions for a birthday present." So that AADE LC meter has been calling me for a while, so I put that on the list. So who knows? Might have one of those sitting here. I think that's a useful piece of test gear. I don't know if you have one, but I'm always coming across a variable cap, and I can't figure out what the value is on it and things like that. And coils, oh gosh, it's coils all over the place. Chokes, what's the value? You know, you wind a toroid and you want to know how close you got to what you were supposed to get, things like that. So I'm hoping to add that to the test bench shelf here. Yeah, and on the parallel ceramics, it's complicated because you don't really know whether a thing is running in the series or parallel mode. I don't know a whole lot about ceramic resonators. They're pretty new, and I went for example to several copies of the kind of 1990s copies of the Radio Amateur Handbook, and didn't find too much about them in there. And there's not a whole lot about them on the web in terms of their internal structure and how they function. I mean, it's obviously a piece of ceramic that kind of buzzes at the desired frequency. The Q is a lot lower than the crystals, and I know that, but you get, there's a lot more, of course, a lot more information out there about quartz crystals because we've been playing with them since the 1920s, but the ceramic thing is new. And the fact that we're using ceramic resonators at 14.3 megs, that's pretty new also. If you look at some of the Strat articles and some of the other QRP websites on using these things, they're talking about lower frequencies. So it may be that these 14.3 meg ceramic resonators are just kind of newly available. But, yeah, it's fun. Kind of looking over there. It's got beautiful, nice, clean signal. I was kind of worried yesterday because after I had it run for a while, the signal on the scope started looking kind of fuzzy. There was obviously something wrong in there. It wasn't clean. It wasn't a clean sine wave. And I just realized the thing needed a bit of a load, so I put a 2 kilo ohm resistor across the output, gave it a load, and it cleaned it right up. So it's nice. It's nice and stable, just sitting there at 14.274. I picked up a frequency counter at a Hamfest here, and it's really neat. It's a nice piece of gear. I just love having it sitting there watching those little red numerals clicking away. So gradually the test bench is it's nowhere near what I really need, but you know, you can make do. A lot of this stuff I built even before I even had a scope. So as long as you've got the multimeter, a couple other things you can get things done, as you know. Turn it back over to you. KL7R, M0HBR.
Oh, yeah. That sounds great, Bill. I had a counter at one point, but I blew it up, and I lost another one. So that's probably going to be my next bit of test gear, right? I need a counter. There's a 16F84 PIC program that turns a PIC into a counter. And I fixed a friend of mine's microcomputer development. He had a breadboard that had a microcomputer on it, like a PIC development environment. Only this was a real microcomputer, and he built it, and it didn't work. And I brought it home, and he had a 7400 NAND gate chip in backwards. I flipped it around, and it worked. And if I get it working for you, you got to buy me a display for the 40.
You kind of dropped out there. I guess you turned it over. Yeah. Well, my counter is half blown up. The guy who sold it to me told me that there were problems with it. Let me just look at it.
Yeah.
The A input goes up to about 100 megahertz, and the other one goes up to about 650 megahertz. And the second one is blown up. Good thing. Since, of course, most of our stuff is below 100 megahertz. So I'm happy with it. It's great for HF. It just cooks away there. It's a simple little thing. And then at a previous Hamfest, at the same spot, I bought this little HamEgg oscilloscope. And it's fine. It, you know, I'm sure people would turn up their noses at it and say that it's doesn't have sufficient bandwidth and all this other jazz. And you get people really get particular and sensitive about oscilloscopes. And you'll get in these endless discussions on the internet about which one's better. Hey, I'm preparing to to write up the ceramic resonator experiment for Sprat. I always wanted to contribute something to Sprat, the GQRP Club magazine. So I had my ancient Canon 8E1 camera on a tripod aimed at the workbench yesterday and took a couple of pictures of this thing. Our digital camera disappeared into the back seat of a taxi cab in Paris a couple months ago, never to be seen again. These things happen. So now I'm back to the Canon AE-1 until we replace the digital camera. I'm back to the first camera that actually had a chip in it. That's the Canon AE-1. We're back into the early 1980s here, photography-wise, Mike. KL7RM0HBR. KL7RM0HBR. Yeah, 6:30 a.m. You know, British summertime, Sunday morning. We're on a 3-day weekend here, so we're off tomorrow too. We have what they call bank holidays here. They just have a few days of the year that they've just decided to have a day off, and tomorrow's one of them. It's weird they don't name it for anybody. Well, you know, they don't have like Churchill Day or anything like that. We would. They just declare it bank holiday and everybody's off. And so that's a good thing. And the kids go back to school Tuesday. And I think my daughter's going to be starting in a new school. She'd been in a little local nursery school. But Tuesday's her first day at kindergarten, so she's kind of nervous about that. That's one of the reasons I'm up earlier. She came in and woke me up. Anyway. Test gear. I have an ancient, my signal, I'm embarrassed to discuss my signal generator, Mike. It's one of these Heathkit SG6s. What looks like one of Heathkit's first projects. I'm not kidding, going back that far. You know, their early projects were signal generators. I think that's one of the first things they came out with. And mine is, I mean, it's really ancient. It's got this kind of brown cover. I guess it could qualify as an antique. If I put it on eBay, I'd probably get a lot more than the $15 I paid for it. But it's pretty horrible, pretty unstable. But it'll generate a signal. It'll put out some RF where I need it to test something. But I could definitely use some improvement in the signal generator area. And I saw I love Sprat magazine. I don't know if you get Sprat. If you don't, you should. It's really great. I like the format too. It's a nice little small kind of pocket size thing. You throw a couple of them in your pocket when you go out. And lately I've been carrying them to work with me, and I read them on the bus on the way to work. And it just seems like every issue of Sprat, even if I've read it three or four times already, if I thumb through it, I'll find something that's useful, some idea, some circuit, some neat way of doing things that I hadn't thought about before. And I saw one in there. It was a real simple inductance meter. The guy just had a crystal-controlled oscillator with a few crystals switched, and a calibrated variable cap. And he calibrated it, so he set it up so that he could put a unknown coil in there, swing the cap through its range, and where it resonated, he set up a dial where it would read out, tell you what the inductance was on the coil. That was pretty neat. So I briefly thought about doing that, but I've decided that I don't want to get into homebrewing my own test gear. I think I'll buy the test gear and homebrew the equipment. Because you get into it a little bit too deep if you start building the test gear. Although I have in my hand now just a real simple piece of test gear that I did build. In building the sideband gear, you're testing it and tuning it up a lot of times. You just need a little audio source. So I have a little oscillator. It puts out 200 millivolts at 713 hertz. I have a little mini box with a battery strapped on the outside with duct tape. And anytime I need to put an audio signal into one of my DSB or SSB transmitters, I just plug this thing into the jack and turn it on. A lot of the simple phone gear, one of the problems is when you want to tune it up, I don't have any kind of tune feature on the transmitters. So the easiest way to do it is just to inject a little bit of audio into the mic input. Saves you from having to sit there saying, yay, low, hey. I hate that. KL7RMs or OHBR.
Oh, yeah. After OHBR, KL7R. Well, that's part of the fun. Having a set of headphones and going, hey, low. and listening to the quality as you're tuning the receiver and tuning the transmitter and getting the zero beat sound in your ears. You had so many things you said on that last go-around. I had a heat sig. I built a bunch of heat kit gear. I built a gen and whatever. I never built a heat scope, but I had that sig gen. And I remember having an AM receiver and tuning around with a shortwave receiver. And I'd be listening to a signal with a shortwave receiver. I think it was an old military... huge dials on it, and it might have been Korean War vintage military base station type receiver. But I couldn't hear sideband on it, and I read something about BFOs, and I didn't have a BFO either. So I tuned that sig generator to 455 kilohertz, and there was enough RF coming out of it that I could use it. It was really unstable sig gen, but with enough. Banging and tapping and coercing, I could get a 455 kilohertz BFO in there, so I could detect sideband and CW signals AM receiver. I don't get the Sprat. I got the Sprat CD. I don't get Sprat. I'm a member of QRP. I get that QRP quarterly, and I really like that. I looked into ordering Sprat, and it was a little difficult, I think. You had to get it through Kanga or something. I wound up getting the Sprat CD through Kanga, but Kanga US, but I couldn't figure out how to get the Sprat without having to go through. Maybe it was you could get the Sprat articles direct from England, but you couldn't get the Sprat CD if you were in the US. You had to go through Kanga. But no, I don't get it. I should. I don't have one of the AAD. I got that LC meter, which is, it works okay. The thing is unstable. I don't know if it's the way I built it, but sometimes it'll just reset. reinvent itself, and I'm pretty sure it's the way I built it. I think I've got a lead slap in the ground there when I bounce it. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. I think you and I have done all these same projects. We probably have a very parallel ham radio history, Mike. BFOs, 455 kilohertz BFOs. Been there, done that. Yeah, I like these little, kind of pocket-sized shortwave receivers. I've traveled around. I've had them with me. The kind of thing you just throw in your briefcase and you have a shortwave receiver. Of course, most of them don't have BFOs in them. And when I was out in the Azores, I had one of these things, and I wanted to be able to listen to the single sideband. It was frustrating because a few of the ham bands were on there, and I could hear the kind of the Donald Duck unmodulated SSB signal, non-demodulated, I think is the way to put it, SSB signals. So I looked around and I found a circuit where you could build a little BFO using, this was the kind of neat part about it, for the tuned circuit, you just use the one of the 455 kilohertz cans, you know, they're all over the place, a little tuned circuit, little tuned transformer at 455 KC from a transistor radio. So I got one of those, put a little transistor oscillator circuit on there, tiny little variable cap to tune it, and built the whole thing in the essential Altoids tin, and would set this thing up and turn on a little radio and have my little oscillator can right next to it, fire that thing up. I think I wrapped a little wire around the radio, and I thought that thing was neat. I used to sit there and happily listen to people shooting the breeze on 17 meter sideband, hear some of my friends on there, and it actually added a nice homebrew dimension to the whole thing, because, well, I was, at least part of the circuit that I was using to hear them was in fact homebrewed. So I'm hoping that the birthday present is the almost all digital LC meter. And I kind of specified that I wanted the factory built version, not the kit version. I'm not crazy about kits to begin with, and sort of in keeping with my principle of not building test gear. I'll build the equipment, but not the test gear. So, I'm kind of lazy in that regard. Hey, I updated my website a little bit. I put a couple of articles on there. Nothing really new, but I put on the article about my, the QST article about my 17 meter SSB transmitter. Put that up there. And also one about, chasing, PCSAT. From the Azores. That's on there too. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. That's www.qslnet/n2cqr. I'll be 73 for you today, and catch you next time. I'll anyway, have a good evening there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Okay, Mike. Well, I feel bad. I'm going to have to improve my expertise and my ability to process the solder smoke, but I'll get there one of these days. But thanks for taking care of that. In the meantime, I'll go take a listen. Great, and pretty soon we'll start getting some listeners. Go ahead, work on the binaural and do good luck with that. And have a good day, good week ahead, and we'll. We'll talk to you again soon for another edition of Solder Smoke. KL7R, you know, M0HBR 1173.